Well, thank you guys for coming this morning. My name is Viktor Shumsky. I'm a Link SSP. I support educational customers for Western and North Central United States. Kind of we have a interesting. I'm trying to figure out where the line goes between the North Central and the South Central. So my colleague Bob Williams, who lives in Florida, didn't make it. He was complaining that he's flying to the West Coast too many times, so it's all on me now. And the session today, like I said, it's going to be no demos of any kind, so if you came to see any demos, you're probably in the wrong session. We have a couple of customers that deployed Link, and we're going to talk about some of benefits, so some of the good stuff and some of the bad stuff, and some of the Link stuff that they experienced during their deployment, right? So it's going to be very few slides. When I came to upload my deck yesterday, I was like, really, that's it? I said I wanted to make it one slide, but I guess somehow I managed to do it in four because first one is my name. And so this is the second slide. So we have a couple of folks from Indiana University. We have Michael and we have Abhi right here. And we have Michael from Ventura Community College System. And what I wanted to do, I wrote up a list of questions that I'm going to put on the board. But before I do that, and before we go all technical, as far as you know what they've done and how they've done it, what I wanted to ask you guys is just participate. This whole thing, the reason we came up with this session is for ideas exchange, for you guys to ask the questions, the hard questions. Hopefully they can answer. If they cannot answer, hopefully I can answer those questions. Otherwise, they're going to take some notes and maybe follow up with that, right? And another little plug, I was just a couple weeks ago, I was at the first Link users group meeting in Seattle. I know we had the Link users group meeting in the past, and then it kind of died off. So there is a new big push for Link users group meetings, and that one was excellent. So they are online. It's going to be nationally driven. If you need some local resources, if you want to talk to somebody locally, the partner is going to show up to the meetings, the people that deployed Link are going to show up to those meetings. A lot of time people have questions about, you know, how do we educate ourselves, what kind of sessions are available, all this stuff going to be available. And at least in Seattle, the meeting is going to be held in one place once a quarter, so you always know where they are, you know when they are, agenda going to be published. Take advantage of that. Okay, so with that said, I'm going to pass my microphones right here. And I'll let these guys introduce themselves and talk about their educational institution for a couple of minutes, and then we're going to go to the questions. However, the questions are not mandatory. If you guys have any questions at all, ask away. Okay? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Michael Morgan, and my job title is Manager of Telecom Convergence. And essentially what I do for Indiana University is converge people or take people from the Link, from our Nortel system to the Link system. We have a university of about 100,000 students, about 20 to 25,000 faculty and staff, and so we're in the process of converting from our CS2100 and an SL100. We have two campuses that have big switches, and then we have five campuses that have smaller switches, and we've converted all the smaller campuses fully over to Link, and we're in the process of about 55% converted from the bigger campuses. We are on Link 2010 currently, but we're converting to 2013 at this same time. And I'll let Abhi talk about that.
Hi, I'm Abhi Jalan. The title on the slide is wrong. I think we may have gotten switched with mics, but I'm the principal engineer at IU. I'm on the team that manages the Link infrastructure, as well as the Exchange and Active Directory infrastructure for IU. So IU has a centralized IT implementation. So all the eight campuses, we run a centralized installation for Active Directory, Exchange, Link, and all of those things. We have two main data centers, Bloomington and Indianapolis. That's where we house most of the infrastructure there. So I've been with Indiana University about almost 6 years now. I'll be able to answer technical questions and things like that about how we implemented Link, you know, what were the technical challenges, and give you that perspective.
Hi, I'm Mike Alexander. I'm with Ventura County Community College District. We have three campuses in Southern California. We have about 35,000. Is this working? Yeah. We have about 35,000 students, 2,000 employees, faculty and staff. We have option or we have CS1000s at each of the main campuses, and then we have smaller systems at the two smaller satellite sites that we have. We have about 23 digital circuits connecting full mesh topology with the CS1000s, and we came up originally with Link 2010, and in the last year we migrated to 2013. We're about 65% complete. And we're leveraging analog gateways and PSTN gateways to interface between the CS1000s and the Link deployment.
All right. So now the list of questions. So this is what I came up with a few days back, but there's quite a few of them. Again, they're not mandatory. So we're just going to go from the top. And again, if you guys have any, you know, kind of look at the list. And if you guys have any questions that interested you, I mean, you're interested in, please go ahead, ask away. That's why we're here. So we kind of talked about the institution. Just a couple of minutes, describe your organizations. I mean, talk about Indiana University, talk about the mature community college system, how long you guys been around, what kind of the culture, what kind of culture you guys have. You know, just from the institution perspective, I think you guys have something to say about that probably.
We could say a little bit about that. That one, I wasn't quite ready for that one.
Okay, so
Indiana University has been around since the 1800s. I do know that. It is like I said before, we have about 100 to 110,000 students. We have multiple campuses. The culture there, we're in the Midwest, so it's very family oriented, very laid back. The student population. Is awesome, I guess I could say. We don't deal a lot with the students. Our organization is structured. We have an organization called UITS, University Information Technology Services, which supports the campus as a whole. So we don't have as many disparate IT professionals in the individual departments. There are some, but the core comes from UITS. We run two data centers. Indiana University actually does quite a bit with Internet 2. We're also with Transpac. We have a global initiative to monitor networks all across the world. We come from a very network-centric environment. We were listed in the top 100 best places to work. UITS was. That was 3 years ago.
Three years.
It's still to me, it's still in the top 100 places to work. So, you want to say anything?
Sure. Like
yes.
Yes.
Basketball is huge. We are the Hoosiers, in case anybody didn't catch that.
So something that will become a little more relevant as we talk a little bit about how we did our deployment and things is because of the nature of how IT is run at IU, it made things a little bit easier. So, as Michael touched on, you know, we have centralized infrastructure and centralized IT, a very large group which does that. And part of that was because of the vision set many years ago by the person that used to be the CIO and then became the president of the university. So that helped shape some of the direction in terms of IT that IU went along with. So that made things a little bit easier, which may be a challenge in some academic settings at other places.
Yeah, I have to say here, I have to say that a lot of colleges that I work with in universities, their IT organization is structured completely differently. Very large campuses, each campus have their own IT. Sometimes each school has their own IT within the campus, and obviously when that happens, large-scale deployments become a very big challenge because everybody has to buy into it, and in higher education, people are very educated, obviously they all have very strong opinions about things, so sometimes that becomes a challenge. How about you, Michael?
So Ventura County is about an hour north of Los Angeles, our main campuses are comprised of three sort of small towns, Moore Park, Ventura, and Oxnard. Each average probably about 100 to 125,000 people. And so our campus of 30, or our multiple campuses of 35,000 students, a lot of those students, it's a community college district, a lot of those students are taking evening classes. A lot of them, maybe just a couple classes in the evening, not necessarily full time. And we also have about 20-25% of our classes are online classes, and which you know, we'll get into later, but the platform that we're using for that is Desire to Learn, which has recently added hooks into their application to be able to allow leveraging link persistent chat in the application. So we hope to be able to use that. Right now we have that in development.
My background is telephony. That's why that question is right there. It's all about voice. So I'm assuming you guys use a LinkedIn voice capacity, you know, to a certain degree. So what prompted the voice infrastructure replacement? Usually what I have seen is people deploy LinkedIn, they use Office 365 and say instant messaging presence is great with voice. Well, that's a different story. You know, we have telco department, you know, we have our Nortel switch or Avaya or Cisco. Please don't touch that. And so what happened there? How did you guys end up using Link as your voice platform?
I'll address that one.
Oh, he puts the hard one on me. Actually, it was the other way around for us. We started, like I said, we have CS2100s. Maybe I didn't say. We have a CS2100 in the Bloomington campus and an SL100 in the Indianapolis campus. And as Nortel started struggling, we started looking at merging platforms. We had an ICA. What does ICA stand for?
It was the alliance with Microsoft and Nortel. I forget what the actual...
So where we looked at trying to do remote call control with Microsoft Link and our Nortel switches. And then as Nortel started to falter, we started looking a little bit deeper into that, a little bit further into using it as a PBX replacement. We did look at other vendors very shortly, very quickly. Didn't spend a lot of time, mainly because they're really expensive. And we had already had an agreement with Microsoft. And we pretty much had the whole suite of applications with Office, and we wanted to make sure that whatever we did choose was to integrate directly with Office. And so Link was a natural choice at that point. I guess that's it for that. I would say for us, it started off with the voice as opposed to with the IM and presence, but that was a big part of it. I don't know that I have knowledge of the original intent. I'm new to the project, about 2 years into this part of it. But I would say that from the beginning, the convergence with Microsoft Office and the presence and the Jelly Bean and all those things were a big part of it, but I wouldn't think it was a strategic direction at the beginning.
Yeah, so we did this. We looked into this early on in around 2007 timeframe, so back in the days of OCS. So there's definitely forward thinking about this is the direction, you know, UC, unified communications is taking place, and trying to see how that can be incorporated. So the feature set offered by OCS was attractive, but I don't know if at that point the decision was made or it was done thinking like how can we use this as a tool to better integrate communications with faculty and staff. And it was mainly just how, you know, what kind of tools would make staff and faculty more productive instead of students weren't really in the picture at that time. And even now, it's a little bit of a challenge of getting the student adoption and usage of Link, you know, increasing that. So it's relatively low at this stage. Yeah, the student usage. Yeah. I'm sorry. What was that? I don't know if they are. If they're definitely, it's more of, you know, we have to develop a nicer story around how the communication would take place, how it would work, and. So it's not. There's no good story that we have right now to get the students to adopt it. So that's why there's not been a drive yet. So we don't want to push and then, you know, have it turn out to be that it's not a good experience for the student, and that sets a bad, you know, taste for them. And, you know, so the initial challenge was, let's get the faculty and staff all using it, let's get the voice conversions done, and then we can focus on how we get, you know, what other things that we can take into account, and then use that as going with the students. Yeah, so
you can probably talk,
Mark. That's an excellent question. The initial push, especially for the regional campus, was a direct telephony replacement. As they adopted it, as they started using it, we kind of let them. We set up training classes for each area. So my team actually trains every individual department, and we show them the advantages and the gains that they get by using a unified platform. But that wasn't the initial intent. The initial intent was to replace failing PBXs and unsupported PBXs. But now that they're using it, they're able to understand the gains that they are getting from this unified platform.
How did you go about the training?
It was scheduled classes. So my team meets with every area, and we set up individual training classes for that area. We do the classes in groups of 10 to 50 based upon which area we're in. And since we're training faculty and staff only, it's pretty straightforward. I do, because our goal is not to put a network IP phone on every person's desk. That would be just a direct replacement. We really wanted to take advantage of the client, and so for them to fully grasp the use of the client, we train that client exclusively. We don't even really offer the network phone unless we see that there's a business need for it. So we're pushing out headsets. We're pushing out the CX300 with Polycom, wireless headsets. Those are their choices. And then if they can give us a business need for a network phone, one of those needs might be that I have students man this phone, so you know they won't sign in for every client. So they will just put a phone with a common area phone there, or a phone with what we call a group account, and they can all share the same phone. So. Every day, that is the nature of my job, is to smooth out the politics. I'd say, to be honest, for us, for me and my role, that's the biggest challenge, is the concept of We do not. We went away. We did away with student telephony. I don't know how many years ago.
Yeah, one of the other things that we have a fairly similar sort of implementation with the devices that we're using. The CX300's USB phone has been working very well. It works in most of our faculty offices and staff offices. And when there's a business need, one of those situations that we've run into in the deployment and selection of devices is, and for the POE phones, we're using mostly CX600s, CX700s. We have a couple of HP 4120s. Which is a nice phone as well. What we've sort of determined is, if you have more than three roles on a phone, if you have a departmental number, if you're answering the phone for somebody else, if you have a delegation, and if you have your own number, then it works best if you have a POE phone that's going to display who's being called. Because otherwise, you have to unlock the phone. On Windows 8, I know you have a little pop-up now that's going to show and allow you to be able to answer the phone. But if you have to unlock your computer to be able to see who's calling you to determine whether or not you want to answer the call, that becomes problematic with the lower-end USB phones that don't have the display information on them.
All right. So I think you guys, from what I see, you guys really kind of went at it from a different perspective. Because for the most of educational institutions that I support, they don't look at Link as the telephony platform first and collaboration platform after, right? So they usually, instant messaging and present, then we can collaborate, and then, it does voice too, that's great. So definitely different. So I think you answered a couple of those questions, so a couple more. I think your guys' process elimination was pretty quick, but any other vendors you guys looked at, what was the deciding factor? How long was the installation process? So this kind of group of questions. Tell us about how that went through, how long it took to deploy, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we looked at, we're a Nortel shop as well, and our PBXs had been put in, they were about 7 years old, and I think we spent $600,000-ish on that implementation. We were very disappointed when Nortel went bankrupt. And then when Avaya came in and said it was going to cost us $650,000 to be able to retrofit our system into a new Avaya system, we thought, well, we're education. Budget's a huge factor for us, so that was one of the first things accounted for our decision. We also looked at ShoreTel, which had a very nice platform. It was very modular, but at the time, OCS 2007 was what was being implemented. It was the product that was out, and we kept hearing about Wave 14, which was the code name for Link 2010. Wave 14 is coming, and it's going to be so much better. And we had seen some of the OCS demos, but we weren't completely sold on the product. And then when we saw the demo basically for Link 2010, it was like a poker game. It was all in. We thought this is the perfect solution for us. Being education, the cost, the price point was right there, and so that made our decision very easy. The implementation time, I think we had our first SBA with a PRI connected to an optional 11C. I think it sat there with five users on it for about a year. So it went really slow to start with, but we gained some momentum there afterwards.
Yeah, so go ahead, Gihan.
I have a question. So on the cost, can you talk about how much did you bring it down? What's the differentials on the cost numbers? Which way from the subject?
We built a single enterprise pool, and since you license the front-end servers, and the cost for us in education, I don't know the exact dollar figure for the enterprise licenses or the front-end licenses, but we basically had to have three front-end licenses and then the SBAs, which come with their own built-in license. So it was significantly less. I would say in the 50,000 range rather than the multiple $100,000 range. Right. No, $50,000, I think. Yeah, including cost of the hardware for the we built three VMware servers to run the front-end pool, and that has the Office access to, what's the WAC services? I forget what, it's a bad acronym, but WAC services that allows you to be able to do PowerPoint presentations within the presentation, be able to allow people to flip back and forth and on mobile devices as well. Those services, as well as the front-end services, and the unified messaging services are all housed on three blades, basically. So the cost was a lot lower. Ongoing costs is going to be reduced because the version of CS1000 code that we had didn't allow SIP support directly. We were going to have to get code updates, and we were still on third-party maintenance, but I don't think that provided software updates for us. So we were looking at the code updates that it was going to allow us to be able to get to SIP trunks, which is where we wanted to eventually get. The cost of the gateways was good enough to be able to reduce the number of T1 lines that we have for the full mesh topology as well. So
the point is for you guys to go SIP eventually, right?
Yes.
So are you guys going to do SIP to the centralized location, or is it going to be spread out?
Yeah, so right now we have four main sites. Each one of them has an ingress, egress, internet connection with gigabit internet connections. And we have a couple point-to-point lease lines between three of the sites as well. Our plan is, though, in the next 2 months, is to switch over to a SIP trunk that comes into our main data center as well as one of our campuses is our DR data center as well. And so we'll have the SIP trunks come into both of those, be able to fail back and forth with the telecom provider, the PSTN. And then we're also beefing up. We're going to reduce the four ingress, egress, internet connections, and have two 10 gig connections, and then have a 10 gig ring between the sites.
So in our case, I know we did look at some of the other options at the time. I don't know specifically. We looked at Cisco. But I think what was attractive about, you know, using OCS at the time was, one was we already had a campus agreement with Microsoft, so that make licensing costs, you know, it was just already covered. You know, we had enterprise scales and the like. So software costs were very low. And again, you know, additional hardware needed, even though I think in the original installation it was 12 OCS servers. Still, overall costs were low. That was the big driver. And just the integration with, you know, we're a big Windows shop, big heavy office, a lot of office users. So the integration there made it an attractive choice. So that was what really sold us on the solution. And in terms of the initial rollout, I think took around 6 months or so. I don't know the exact how long it took to then start getting users converted, but it's been an ongoing process. We're still not done. So initially we had around 1,600 enterprise voice users, and now we're up to around 13,000, and the goal is to eventually have all the faculty staff, so about 25,000 enterprise voice users. So we're still in the middle of, so this has been, you know, we started off with OCS, we upgraded to OCS 2007 R2, then to Link 2010. Now we're doing the Link 2013 rollout as well, so it's an ongoing process. And we'll be switching, as part of the 2013 implementation, we'll also be bringing in SPCs and setting up SIP trunking for at least the core campuses at Bloomington and Indianapolis. And then based on how that rollout goes, we'll reconsider whether we want to do a centralized SIP deployment for the regionals or do distributed connections there.
You guys notice, have you guys looked at the pricing? We're talking about SIP trunking here. Have you guys checked out the pricing? How is the pricing compares from the PRIs? You're going from, I don't know, 10 PRIs in your option switch, option 61, to a SIP trunk. Is there any pricing differences?
Well, initially, it was more.
Yeah.
But we just did an RFP in the last 3 months, and we got some very aggressive pricing from some fairly major players, and so we did decide to go ahead and make that switch. We initially had, I think, 16 Sonos gateways distributed around the whole campus, all the campuses, and we're going to go with two Acme Packet SBCs.
Yeah, and for us, for us, the cost is significantly different. With, if you look at our call volume, and we're signing the contracts in 2 months, like I said, and the call volume that we have currently on the PRIs and on the COTs, because I think we have about 180 mix of loop start, ground start, analog trunks too. The call volume across all those with the same model in the SIP, with the active passive failover between the two sites, I think we're going to save 7,000 per month.
Yes. We're talking about that. Right?
We're going to make everybody scan everything and email it.
We actually use a product. We have a fax service at IU through Interactive Intelligence. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that at a Microsoft thing. But,
they're a partner here at the conference.
So it's okay. So our faxing solution is that we have a web front end for people to upload their faxes. Now, that doesn't take care of all of our faxing needs, but we will be faxing over to SIP trunk. Our provider has, I can't use the word guaranteed us faxing will work, but they say that they fully support faxing. So AT&T is our provider. So are you saying that as in it's not going to work, or it is going to work?
Good luck with that one is what
good
you're
luck.
Saying.
Yeah. Actually, we probably will not do that. We do have, we will keep some form of traditional PBX up, analog PBX up. So if we run into problems, that'll be our fail safe. We're going to keep our emergency phones and our elevator phones and modems and things. We still have to have those things, and those won't go to FXSs and FXLs, mainly because we're such a big campus. We do.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I can answer that question.
One of the options that we've considered is, and we're going to be putting in, we have implemented FXS gateways for our analog devices for both blue light phones as well as fax machines, analog phones, and elevators. We're going to be sticking with, I think we're going to get 1 MB, just standard old lines from the telco to go into the elevators. But that seems to be working pretty well. We were super excited to have Link 2013 bring in trunk-based routing so that we could do a lot of our routing through Link rather than having to use point-to-points between the campuses. But one of the things that I did run into problems with the fax machines was even if, and I think every person that I've talked to, integrator, big and small, has said don't put faxes in Link. Even though you can create a CS analog device and you can say this is a fax device, there just seems to be problems with it. And whether it's partial transmissions or no transmission, it's a lot of headaches. And so, but what I found was even if I'm doing link-based routing and keeping even between two gateways on the same campus, and so, but it's routing through Link, it's still, I end up with a percentage of missed transmissions on the faxes. So even the routing, as far as faxes are concerned, anything having to do with faxes, I would keep it out of Link, has been my experience. I hope that there's some growth there in the future. As far as blue lights, one of the things that we've considered is putting in wireless connections. So 3G connections or some sort of cellular is one of the options.
No. Actually, the I3 works well for outbound faxing and inbound faxing. And then for the people that feel like they have to have a tactile fax machine, they're still on our PBX current. We did, though, I will say, we did take our faxing from our regional campuses and bring it up through for long-distance faxing up through one of our main campuses. And we ran into problems with the Sonos gateways at first, but if we keep the fax transmission at 14.4, we're able to have no issues with that. When they went above 14.4, we ran into a problem.
We had the same thing. We changed it. I dropped it down to 9600, just cutting to the chase, and it takes forever, but your success rate is much higher. Yeah.
Well, I've been told like 14 years ago the fax thing is dead. Dying a small portable desk. I used to work with a company called AVT, and we had a product called RightFax. It was a pretty good fax server. That was so Dialogic, yeah, fax cards, and yeah. So that's been quite some time ago. It's still around. So the next question is about the partners. So any partners involved in your guys' implementation? Did you guys do it yourself? Partners involved? What kind of involved? And how was that?
We've worked with a couple small integrators. At first with Link 2010, that's one of the reasons I think that it took a year to make any progress with it. I think we went through 7 different designs, and the project management switched to a couple different people outside of the organization. But we've also, and at the same time, I think I sort of felt like we were paying for the learning curve that was happening with the integrator as well. In the product itself, I think with the first releases of 2010 was changing and progressing. So there was a lot of change happening there. Then about last summer, our CTO went to Dell World and went to the booth, and there was a Microsoft person there and a Dell person there, and he ended up with some sort of special business card that had a hidden link on it, and he typed it into an address bar, filled out a form, and then we won some sort of enhanced 2014 engagement between Microsoft and Dell, where for I think $30,000 we received $30,000 of implementation and building of 2013 from Dell with a professional services person on site, as well as $30,000 in endpoint. So we received a group of PoE phones as well as headsets, both over the head and double ear, so, and that integration went really well, really, really smoothly.
So Dell was the implementer?
Yes, they were the implementer. The requirement for that was that we had to have, we had to be completely migrated onto 2013, and we had to have 2,000 enterprise voice users in 30 days, basically.
In our case, when we did the initial rollout of OCS, we did have enabling technologies as just do some consulting for us and just vet our design to make sure, since it was a first time getting our feet wet. But since then, you know, with 2007 R2, Link 2010, and 2013, we've been doing the design and implementation all in-house with the engineering team that we have.
Yeah, so this is what Michael was talking about. Microsoft, and in the past and even now, we do have all kind of programs, right? So every year, product group comes up with a set of programs. Well, we deploy this whole seats, you know, by the end of the calendar year, and there is some money allocated. They call them BIF, business investment funds, right? So every year it's less and less, and because we're in the public space, an educational institution, it's very, you know, there's very strict rules what we can and cannot contribute to those deployments, and I'm not even sure if it's on the United States or it's worldwide, but when those programs do work, it's a beautiful thing. It certainly helps educational institutions. Okay. Okay, so let's see, the partner, this is a good one. So what was the sum of the unexpected discoveries, I'm pretty sure you guys have a few, during the deployment? So why don't you guys go first? What was the sort of, what stuck in your mind? What was the aha moment, I guess?
Aha, the Macs don't work. We struggled a lot with adoption. In education, I've noticed a shift over the last 10 years where a lot of people are switching from a PC platform to a Mac platform. And the adoption rate initially of the Mac users was very low. In fact, we just decided to give them all CX600s and say you can use the client at your own leisure if you choose to. I think if I had one thing that I could ask Microsoft to do is have feature parity between the Mac users and the PC users. It's our biggest complaint. In the Mac client updates have been a struggle because half the time it breaks more than it fixes. I hate to say that, but it's the truth. So that was the big aha moment. A lot of our users, as we give it to them, they're hesitant. Mainly because of change, to be honest. It's mainly because of change. But I see the aha moment in them when they realize I look at this jelly bean and I know that the person is on a phone call. I know it's such a basic thing, but it's such a huge thing for them. Once they use it, once they see it, once it's in their hand, once they're touching it, they do get that aha moment. The other thing for me was the adoption of the IM. We didn't have an IM platform, a centralized IM platform before. And I mean, I think last month we had 1.5 million IMs. It's just superseded all my expectations.
To add to that, just, you know, I do a lot of reporting on the infrastructure side and look at the numbers and stuff. So while I think, you know, maybe I've, being an IT person, I have a higher expectation for people to embrace the technology, but I still think that people love the voice part and they use that, but it's still a little bit of a challenge to get them to use the other modes of communication. So even though there is a great number of IM usage, if you look at IM parity versus, you know, audio and video calling, it's not as high as you think we'd expect. So it's a little bit of a transition there. And conferencing use and video use has been, the adoption and the uptake has been a little bit slower than expected. And I think part of that is just this culture change and, you know, the nature of the organization, how they collaborate. So it's a little bit of a a shift in the mindset and how we push out training and things like that. But that's just something that was noticed when looking at the statistics. Yes. We're not active. I mean, they can. So the way it works is if they choose to use Link, they can get the Link client and they can sign up for an account and, you know, use the functionality. But we don't market it or push it out or, you know, really do that yet. So that's, you know.
Sure, sure. So it's more of, you know, we want to make sure that when we tell them here, you know, go use Link, we tell them why it's beneficial, why they should be doing it, right? Instead of just saying, here's another tool, you know, you have 20 other modes of communication, here's one more. So really it's more of making a compelling story for them to use Link and how it would benefit them. So that's still something under development and, you know, making sure we market it out in the right way. That's really just the primary reason because there's no, they have other means of communication right now which is working well for them. And there are certain avenues like communicating with faculty would be really great for them. So we want to make sure that, you know, we get the faculty trained and use well-versed in using Link and they're comfortable with it. And since that transition is still happening, we're waiting to get the students on board with that.
The same question?
Yes.
Our student, no, we don't have we don't have our students in Active Directory. So all, we have a portal that we use for single sign-on. It's different applications that we have on the web, mainly for students, but it's also for faculty. Staff and faculty authenticate against Active Directory. That's what that portal signs in with, those credentials. But with students, it's using an LDAP repository. We don't have active, you know, licenses for students to be in Active Directory. So, but you know, with Desire to Learn, our distance learning application, with the integration that exists there, instructors are going to be able to create meeting rooms basically for their classes if they want to, and then the chat sessions and the conversations can be recorded, so students can go back into those classroom minutes and then see, you know, what was the discussion about. There's actually hooks into the discussion there with the persistent chat where the instructor can set up buzzwords for the conversation and change the background and the information that's being displayed in the class based on content in the conversation as well. So that's coming. That's still in development, but that's that'll probably be the first engagement that students have in Link.
That's an excellent point. And I think one of the reasons why we really haven't pushed it out to the students is we want to make sure that we can give them a return on their investment. They're going to have a desire to get something out of it. So if we can get our faculty and staff on board and push that out, distance learning is going to be a big, huge part of it, and that's a big push that we're starting right now with distance learning. I'm sorry? Yes. It is not. It's yeah. Grown.
I think that, so general asked about the fit zoning, right? So the fit in the classroom, the model. I think it's becoming sort of a buzzword and bigger thing. I think we're behind the front door compared to you guys.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Because you said that you don't choose on the streets of thought.
So we don't have students in Office 365.
We do. So we have, for student email is done in Office 365, but we don't we just use email in the Office 365. Our Link is not provided through the, that's all done on-premise. We're working to getting on, you're talking, oh, in 365 or on, yes, we are, yeah. Again, I don't think that the challenge is in letting them use Link. We could let them do it, but it's the same question you just asked, right? If we did let them use Link now, what would make them want to use Link, right? We could be like, hey, here's Link, you can go ahead and sign in.
It should be intuitive. It's like nobody goes around people's houses and say, I'll teach you how to shop online, and I'll teach you how to go and buy your groceries from Walmart or wherever. They should be able to just, and students do.
Yeah.
Kids they start playing around, they work it out themselves. They're not interested in reading guides or instructions.
Yeah, I think, well, so we did, there was a session where we brought students in and we showed them Link and we asked them, you know, would this be beneficial for you? How would you guys use it? Had that discussion. And one of the things they pointed out was if the faculty and staff were faculty were using it and they did things like office hours through Link or made themselves available for interaction through Link, that would be a big driver for students. They won't have to, you know, make a trip all the way to their office just to ask some questions or, you know, so we took that to heart, and that's what we're trying to get, right? Get the faculty converted, get them using Link, and then make the big push for the students. Okay, this is available. Here are the benefits for using Link. Here's what you can do with it. So we just want to do the timing right. That's what we're working on.
I'm being slightly mean because I was being challenging there, but from the other side, I do see challenges, and this is more to Microsoft. So I put it to them all the time, is one of the things that we struggle with is staff not wanting to share the presence state with students. You've got a lot of academics that see the benefit in being flexible with their hours. They want to get rid of those queues of students outside their offices. They want to be able to go home and open themselves up for a couple of hours at night. But because they're using Link for communicating with colleagues as well, they want dual presence states. It goes to the kind of dual out of office. And I really do struggle to see why kind of Microsoft aren't doing something about that, especially with kind of all the cloud opportunities and going forward and federating. It makes sense.
So that question came up actually a few times. So the idea is that what you're asking, that you should be able to have your presence shown differently to different group of people. Mm. That question came up before a number of times, actually. It's not a trivial thing to do, I think. They were looking at this stuff. I'm not even sure that it would be our audience, honestly. But back to your point in the question about the students, so I'll give you an example. We have one of our partners, they wrote an application speaking of why students would or would not use it. So they wrote an application to call the my classroom or something. I can't remember the name of it. So basically the idea is, so when the student rolls into the class, they're automatically put into the group with their classmates, which is 30 people or whatnot. Yeah. And when they walk into their incline, they automatically see all those people in their incline. So what it gives them is ability to communicate on the assignment, they see their teacher, they see their class, and then they're on to the next class, and so on and so forth. So when I talk about LinkedIn through my presentations, and I show, like, you know, this is what we can do, is messaging and presence and voice, but this should be no brainer. I mean, you know, we can make a phone call, woohoo, using it. That's what we feel. When you really start making a progress and move forward is what we call CEDP, Communication-Enabled Business Process. So like you said, if you can take Link and you put it together with Desire to Learn and create courses online, if you can take Link and create classes for students so they can collaborate. So using Link API, the server API, the client API, then they're going to have a really good, big, you know, benefit and desire to use Link. On the other hand, if they're trying to communicate with the faculty and staff, and faculty and staff are not sure how to use it, could be a one-way communication, right? So I think another point that is coming, and I think they announced it, you know, with the Skype, right? So even if the students are not in the Active Directory, they're all using Skype, some of them, or most of them, speaking of Mac, by the way, right? So that is one of the, I think, huge benefits, that collaboration between Link and Skype, and Office 365, the students can be in Office 365. So I think all those pieces are coming together, but the business case, and I agree with you, if you give a student just another tool, like, well, I'm texting here, I'm texting, what's the difference? So, but if you give them something extra, ability to check on the, you know, faculty and staff schedule, ability to communicate with other folks in class, the other question.
Just related to this, that's what we're doing with one community college system, and actually in the Midwest, somewhere in Indiana, or somewhere around there, where they started out with using Presence and IM for their help desk, and that drove adoption among the students because they could escalate calls
internal SMSG building, so Microsoft internal building. This is the first year where they're going to do link classes as the primary delivery mechanism for all Microsoft employees, in case the case classes will be secondary. Or as long as Microsoft existed, it was the other way around. So this is the first year where it's going to be that way. So that's number one. Number two, I think you made an important point. So when you take unified communication and you make it part of your business process, just like you guys did, drives adoption, drive also. It's not about, I think, technically, again, it should just work. That should be a given, right? But what you layer on top of that, how you add the business value, that what brings it up. And I think with the Skype and so student adoption will go up, I think.
You had a question?
Oh, I had a couple of comments.
Go ahead.
Our experience has been the students don't do anything over class in the market. So, link adoption is pretty much a function of the faculty using link because of the communication mechanisms. Now, that's not to say the students don't use Skype or Facebook.
So basically what you're saying, if I'm a teacher, I'm a faculty member, and I said, okay, I want all the questions, you know, I give you an assignment, and I'm going to be available between 6 to 7, and this is my link ID, and I'm going to take questions via link. What are you saying? Well, you're going to ask those questions via link. Right.
So you
So when you said chancellor, I have to tell you this story. So about 3 years back, I was in Sonoma Valley, and I was presenting to this college. I wouldn't tell you the name of it, but so I spent about an hour and a half talking about name and presence and those processes that we're talking about, the ability to reach out to these students. They had an orthodox, by the way. So after I spent all this 2 hours talking about how wonderful this would be, how it changed their business processes, one person basically stood up and said, okay, but can you guarantee that our chancellor, when he picks up the phone, I think it was him, when she picks up the phone, they're going to have a good experience on the voice call? And I said, okay, so to guarantee that, you're pointing for 30,000 of your students and 5,000 faculty members, and then you buy one hotline for $11 a month, and you're going to call in your chancellor's desk, and we're going to be done with it, right? So I just have to tell you the story. Yeah, that's why it's funny. Because, you know, it takes a while to get there, I guess. So, but as far as the Mac line, I wrote it down. So you mentioned the Mac.
Yes.
So there is another university, University of Illinois, Champaign. They have a very large deployment of Ling. And what they did, they're the ones that kind of did the flash cut, because they used to have a Centrex. And the contract was up, and at some point, they had, you know, it's going away. You know, we're not going to pay $300 a month anymore, we're going to go in, right? So we deployed Ling. And one of the complaints was the Mac line. So I had them in Seattle in November, and they talked to the Proto Group. So not 2014, 2013, we did two releases of Mac line, and one broke more stuff than it's fixed.
It did.
Right.
Yes, it did.
But the second one in September, I think, it was a better one. My understanding, we have another Mac release coming up within the next couple of months. And they do have, they promised the parity. So you ask for the parity. It will be a parity at some point. The problem was, and we kind of showed our cards there, the Mac group developing the Link client was a separate group from the folks developing the Windows client. And so they have their own roadmap and their own schedule. They've all been brought up together. So now they develop them together. And so I think that is, in education, it was an issue.
So I have one.
Sure, go ahead.
Go up all the way back to high school when we talked about Mac. You said my husband was taught Mac for your business here at 600. Have you gone back to the 300 now that they work?
We have. We started pushing the 300 for the Mac users. The biggest problem is that a lot of Mac users I'm a Mac user, but I used PCs 25 years before I started using a Mac. The culture or the nature of Mac users are a little different. So they don't want a Microsoft client, period, just because it's a Microsoft client. And it has nothing to do with whether it works. It has nothing to do with if it gives me additional functionality. It's because it's Microsoft. I am not, I said I was 25 years, I was a PC programmer, developer, and all that stuff, and I saw Mac, and I loved it, and I never went back. Actually, to be honest, I run VMware, so I have Windows 8 on my Mac as well, but I'm kind of half and half. But that is a direct challenge for us, getting them to even open the client and feel like they need to use that client. Although, as the client has grown over, like you said, these last two upgrades, the first one put us back 5 years, to be honest. But then when they fixed it, we started pushing out the 6300. So we are pushing it first, but if they have any issues at all, we're swapping them out for the 6600. Which kind of, for us, you know, one of the things we talked about was the price of this. We talked about that earlier. We need to also factor in the cost of those endpoints, because a $30 phone, a $200+ phone is a big difference.
Have laptops, and so they have built-in webcams as well. And so where we were doing the same thing with the PoE phones, with the CX700s and the CX600s with Mac users. We found that, you know, it did start to work with the CX300s after a couple upgrades, but a lot of those people don't even want the USB phone. They just prefer to use the built-in webcam that's in their laptop.
It actually works better.
It does.
I think.
All right, so where are we at? I'm just looking at the list of questions there.
I think we're up for time, right?
Somebody was always going to ask that question. So for us, it ends up being 50-50. We have about... Yeah, so we classify USB devices and then the network IP phones, and we're about 50-50.
We're probably about 70-30. We probably have about 20% of our devices are webcams, Microsoft LifeCams, either the 720 or the 1080p. A lot of those individuals that ended up and pushed for getting a webcam, though, you walk into their office and the camera's turned out the window. And so I don't know the purpose of it. 70% USB.
Wow.
So 70% USB?
Yep.
Wow.
Okay. Wow, you guys really out there. So when... You don't have to tell me. I'm a lot for it. I think it's a great idea. Just go ahead.
Do you have any issues on YouTube on wireless?
Yeah, we've had great success with wireless. How many wireless devices do we have?
So what devices specifically? Are you just referring to like laptops with the Wi-Fi? It's hard to quantify. I don't think we have numbers, but there's a good number of people using that, in the thousands, I would say.
So. I use wireless every day. I don't plug in.
Yeah, I don't have problems with video or voice going over WAN on wireless to another wireless device. Now, where I have had issues is on mobility on a 4G connection with a voice call. If for whatever reason you're placing a link call from your mobile phone
over
4G, then it gets a little choppy.
So it has to be necessary to
make
quality service?
No.
We didn't do quality service either.
We didn't.
But our network is...
There's a good white paper on the networking that just came out like a month ago, the upgraded networking paper. I was at Tech Radio 3 weeks ago, and we had a specific session on wireless. So the little unknown secret, or the known secret, how to make the wireless link work, or make it first work on your wire. Right? So in the end of the day, it's working on wireless that makes it better. That's number one. Number two, I think they gave an example. They showed we were integrated. They brought up the analyzer. Everybody was having their Wi-Fi devices, and even though it was just a great wireless connection to the convention center, all this noise that everybody brought their Wi-Fi devices was making all kind of issues. So obviously, wireless isn't interesting, but it certainly could be that. I know Aruba Networks makes some very interesting stuff for wireless specifically in the U.S. But at home, I work from home, and I'm only one.
Yeah, it's the same issue with wireless. It's not link specific, right? If you have a bunch of people in the room, you know, you're limited to how many people can connect to the access point, and you have those issues. But if you have, you know, if your wireless connectivity is good, link works great on it. That's what our experience has been. Whatever you want.
And also, what are you replacing with you? I've heard some D2L that's mature, but what are you going to be replacing? Are you going to get rid of Blackboard, collaborating to get rid of
Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. What are you replacing?
So the distance learning, we're just scratching the surface with that with Microsoft Link. We have a variety of tools that we're doing with that now. We're doing Adobe Connect. That's the biggest one right now. And I'm not sure that there's any plans to replace Adobe Connect with Link yet. we just had a meeting just in the last week where we're going to, as we move to 2013, this is where we're going to really push for distance learning with the Microsoft Link client. I think it's pretty entrenched right now with Adobe Connect. It's difficult when you have something that works and works well and say, now here's another product that works and works well, and then convince them that that first one is not going to work. So I think we may have to at some point take the area that the K-12 went and say no more Adobe Connect, we're going to all do it on Link.